We are back, and in more ways than one, we're in Kevin's garage.
Yeah, back to our roots.
That's right.
This is our roots.
Yeah, this is like our meeting at the Delta.
You know, and it's funny.
The crossroads, if you will.
Are you going to talk about how many things aren't holes in my garage? Or
yeah, well, no, because we used to talk about the hole in the ceiling, in the roof here, but now, like, it just looks like a tiny little baby hole compared to, like, Mark's house.
You got to get up there, like, somehow.
It's true.
What I wanted to point out, and I keep going back to this because it's the gift that keeps on giving, is will you see how many plays Pink Panties has now from Shandozi? You weren't around for that show, were you?
No, I wasn't, but I mean,
you got to go listen to that song.
I can only imagine, like, if it's half
7,000.
It was like around 6,000, so I can only hope that we are spreading the gospel of Shandozi's Pink Panties.
I thought it was even less than 6,000.
It was right. Well, I went back and listened to it. And what I said was, it's got about 6,000 plays.
Did you go back and listen to it like 1,000 times?
I did not. Well, anyway, all I'm saying is I hope we, so to speak, move the needle a little bit for Shandozia Pink Panties.
Well, it's political season. Yeah, it sounds like you guys are on a cause.
Let's keep an eye on this one. Thanks for bringing that up.
Sure.
We'll make sure that next time we shoot out some, when we send out something about the show, to promote it, we remind everyone to go listen to Pink Panties by Shandozia, because you will not
Peter,
just listen to it once.
Peter, who we had on the show, had listened to it like in the course of doing research for coming on the show, and now it's like one of his favorite songs, and he'll come into work just be like, if your panties is missing.
Like I said, you will not listen to the song once and walk away from it. You will listen to it multiple times, probably one after another the first time.
Is it possible for this show to go off the rails in the first 4 minutes?
Yeah.
This might be. Shane, you had a thing to talk about.
Well, why don't we play some music?
Let's do it.
Let's get everybody.
Some theme music?
Yeah, let's play some theme music. So, right. You know, for now, I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
Somebody likes it. Ryan, there's sketchy people involved in this, I'm sure. Last week, I was out last week. I was out of the show, as Mark is tonight, producer Mark.
Yeah, Mark's in New Orleans tonight, and we spent, Shane, I don't know if you listened to last week's show, we spent most of last week just pouring out tall boys, because you weren't here.
Oh.
And then Ryan would weep for 10 or 15 minutes at a time. Then we'd have to, like...
Yeah, I think we edited most of that out.
Oh, that's, okay.
Yeah, so yeah. The show is about 8 or 9 minutes long.
Yeah, it's 8 or 9 minutes long. Uh-huh. And a lot of sniffling, like, you know.
Well, I haven't heard it yet because Mark hasn't finished it because he's in New Orleans, I'm sure.
Yeah. With his Irish wife teaching robotics.
Something, yeah.
Yeah.
So Ryan, he sent me a text, and it was just a link to a Grantland feature, and it's a piece by Chuck Klosterman in which he attempts to attend a Creed concert and a Nickelback concert. They're not playing together. It's a doubleheader in the same night, which he does.
Two different venues, but the same city.
Right. In the same, I mean, they're, I mean, the beginning of the article, it says like,
why would
a night with the world's most hated bands. That's the headline. We take in a concert doubleheader with Creed and Nickelback, which, you know,
as far as I'm concerned, he's a brave man,
for many different reasons. But it's quite an amusing piece. I think Klosterman, like,
I think he's a really funny writer.
I think he's a little bit in love with his own prose a lot of the time. But when he's on, he's on. This is on. This is great writing. Highly recommend it. But the reason I just wanted to bring up one part of this and see if you guys agree with this, because I do, but I would add a couple more to his list.
Are you talking about the list of five?
The list of five. So I'm going to just read what he says. He says, over the past 20 years, there have been five bands totally acceptable to hate reflexively. He or she could just openly hate them, and no one would question why. The first of these five acts was Bush, who bizarrely and predictably was opening for Nickelback that very night. The second was Hootie and the Blowfish. The third was Limp Bizkit. And the last two were Creed and Nickelback. And I think he's very, very right about all five of those bands.
Sure. Like,
unquestionably.
I feel like sort of the crux, the question that's sort of not being asked here is like, what goes through your mind when you've seen the first show and then you have to drive to the second show? Like, you go like, you know, like it's a double header of shit. And you've already gone through shit, and you're like, well, at least I don't have to do that anymore. Well, oh, but I have to do this other thing that's
equally
important. The
impression equally he was trying to appreciate both of them.
Well, he doesn't really hate either band, and that's the reason why he did the article.
Anyhow, we are here to talk about an
album. That's true. The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
She felt as if maybe she was breaking
out
of
She had place. A little broken down in there after this one.
She had to, as someone said, which we'll get into later, she had to go to the Rock in order to record this record.
This one or the...
This one.
Well, I think she did spend a little time in jail later on.
Well, no. No, and I don't mean the Rock said, like she went
to
Alcatraz.
Like the Rock of Jesus?
No. Well, in this case, Kingston. Like, she went to Jamaica. So her, like... Okay, so Rohan Marley, who is
Bob Marley's one of his many children.
One of his many children.
Many children.
Who in turn is the father of five of her six children. They recorded most of this at Tuff Gong, which is Bob Marley's studio in Kingston, Jamaica. And so he made it sound like, I read an account of this, he made it sound like, you know, in order to sort of get out from under all of the tumult, you know, that was going on with the Fugees at the time and whatnot.
Lauryn Hill being one of the three Fugees and involved in a romantic relationship with Wyclef Jean, who was also married.
Yeah. So they made it sound like she had to sort of get away to this, like, sort of remote place in order to put this, what turned out to be a really great record together. But in fact, like, she went to Jamaica. So.
That's the Rock. Is that the slang?
He termed the Rock like she had to go away to a remote island.
I thought maybe she was like training with Dwayne Johnson or something.
No,
like.
No. I think she might have been at the swim up bar. I have no idea what she was doing. But anyway, yeah. So lots to talk about with this record. So which one of you clowns picked it?
Me,
that clown.
Yeah, okay,
yes,
this one.
Yes, tell us.
A lot different than Nickelback.
Vaguely different.
A little bit. What did you think about it?
You know, here's the thing. Like, first impressions, before I actually... This was really a really interesting experience because it's a record that I have known the legend of for a really long time, and I am not... This may shock you. I'm not really the prime audience for neo-soul.
Me too.
Yeah, so... Anyway,
you're the least of the audience in the room.
Yeah,
the
that's
Neo
probably
Soul.
True.
I'm uniquely unqualified to talk about this record.
Well, at the very least, you're not who they're aiming for. But yeah, and neither am I. But it's a record that I. So here were my impressions of Lauryn Hill going into this. Like, she's a little bit enigmatic, kind of crazy. She had this sort of, you know, meteoric single record output. And then, like, nothing
just
has been
away.
Exactly the same since.
And with the,
like,
Fugees before that, I mean, yeah. Meteoric is right. I mean, the Fugees sold almost 30 million records worldwide, and then two fucking years later, this album came out and just changed, like, music. You know, like, she didn't deal with the pressure.
I remember, I remember a little bit of the, I don't know, for lack of a better term, like, what was in the air at that time. Like, even not knowing the record at that time, not being part of that. Like, I just remember that it was omnipresent. It was everywhere. And if you go poking around just to see, like, you know, go to Spotify or whatever and see how many times these, like, the main hits on this record have been downloaded. Like, crazy. Like,
lots.
Like, more than 10 million times. Like, anyway, so you get a real sense of the impact. I will say that you know, some of the, just because I'm not necessarily a huge fan of neo-soul in style, like, some of the lesser tracks on this record, like, probably didn't appeal to me that, they literally didn't appeal to me that much, but some of the stuff that ended up hitting the top of the charts in some of the cases, like, I can see why it's compelling material. Like,
I agree with you a lot. There's a lot on this record that's overindulgent. There's too many ballads. It's way too fucking long. I don't think there's a song under 4.5 minutes long. on the record. However, when it's good, it's fucking great.
Yeah.
I mean, their good shit on this album is so, like, even just the single that everybody knows, like, Doo-Wop, that thing. Like, yeah. That song.
That's the only song that I actually really knew.
I knew that one in
terrific.
One More.
It's a fucking terrific song.
It's one of the best singles of the 90s. I mean, yeah, it's amazing. And the thing about her, what's really cool to listen to, even there's a lot of there's a lot of reggae influence, which normally I don't like.
Jamaica.
Right. Well, of course. Yes. I mean, all of the backstory. Right. But it was done so tastefully on most of the songs and incorporated really well that I didn't even notice that it was like, you know, normally you kind of roll your eyes like in the, oh, yeah, kind of stuff. But she's such an amazing singer. I mean, that goes without saying. I mean, the song that put
her.
It's
a really good Barb Marley.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you bring up a really interesting point, which is that, like, okay, so there are all of those Marley kids. And in this case, the legend goes, lots and lots
no
of
pun intended.
Well,
the
yeah.
legend.
Well, sure, yeah. Not John Legend, who was a
or
part
not,
of
no, no,
the
no,
album,
not the album legend.
Bob Marley legend,
or the album legend. Oh. But yeah, so lots to unpack there too. But yeah, when all of this was coming together, I think there are a variety of things that are super interesting. Not the least of which is that, you know, she like so you mentioned like your little Marley riff there. What immediately I thought of was how sort of Ziggy Marley records tend to be super derivative of his dad and like
yes.
kind of a watered down
that's what I'm saying
modern version of that.
He's allowed to though, man.
Of like, course he is. Sure, yeah. Of course he is.
But yeah. I mean, I think I get what you're saying, and it's kind of what I'm saying is that a lot of times like reggae can lend itself to parody really easily, and
she's not burdened by that. Because
right.
she didn't come from that family.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
One other thing I just want to say real quick before we go on. It's super important. Just her sheer level of talent. Like, if you remember the song that really put the Fugees on the map, that their biggest hit was Killing Me Softly, and like how amazing she sang that song. But then also, the first real track on this album, she's a fucking incredible rapper. I mean, like,
yeah.
It's a real double threat. Like, just her talent level alone, it elevates this album. Like, you know, without the production, without the quality of the songs. Now, again, there's a lot to quibble about. I think, you know, with the like Jesus Christ, I don't need any more D'Angelo ballads.
That may have been the nadir of the record.
It was, and I like D'Angelo too. But oh, and you know, can I say one thing real quick? And I want to turn it over to you, Ryan. But I just want to mention this, like. Speaking of nadir, not that this drags anything all the way to the ground, but there's a type of instrument, it's a percussion instrument that's pretty much only used in soul, like, or like the MTV Unplugged version of Tears from Heaven, which is like they put it on a drum kit and they run their fingers through it like chimes, like, I don't know what it's called, but it's like, and then like, it's all over this album, and it's so annoying. It's so like Kenny G to me. And if I hear that on a song, I can't get past it. It's all over that D'Angelo song.
Well, the thing I can't get past in neo-soul as a genre, and this record in particular, is the vocal gymnastics. Like taking a one syllable word and stretching it out into like 8 or 9 syllables. Like, I mean, just cut it out, man.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that, for sure.
That stylistically, I think we're all on the same page that's just not going to be our sweet spot. But yeah. But it is
I mean,
to this
she's
day, like,
it
no,
wasn't
just as a
talented thing. As hell. Yeah. I get it.
It wasn't as it's she's more talented when she's not doing that, and that's the really
right.
most egregious part about when she sings. But if you think about at that period of time, like we're so used to living in the post-American Idol age where that shit has been so predominant, for
celebrated.
The last,
like,
yeah, but yeah. at that time you didn't have a lot of people. There, what's the term? Not glissando? Is it glissando? Mariah Carey was pulling there. You know, you saw that more with males, not as much with females. It wasn't just as big of it. It wasn't just as eye-rollingly annoying at the time. But I think that you were dead on with that criticism, because you are. Somehow
I mean, I'm not even necessarily calling it criticism. It's just why I can't get into it.
It's a little bit like Fringe on a lampshade. Like,
sure.
You can put it there, but what's it doing, really?
But yeah, why? Like, what's the point?
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
Well, why don't we listen to
Ooh, should we do? Can we do doo-wop?
Yeah, let's do that. I mean, let's start it off that way. Okay. Sure, everybody knows that. Yeah, doo-wop, that thing.
Since you were looking for your friend, the one you let hit it and never called you again. Remember when he told you he was about to Benjamins? Yeah. You act like you ain't him, they give him a little trim to begin. Now you think you really gonna pretend like you wasn't down and you called him again. Plus when you give it up so easy, you ain't even fooling him. If you did it then, and you probably can. Talking out your neck saying you're a Christian. A Muslim sleeping with the gin. Now that was the sin that did Jezebel in. Who you gonna tell when the repercussions spin? Showing off your ass cause you thinking it's a trend, girlfriend. Let me break it down for you again. You know I only say it cause I'm truly genuine. Don't be a hard rock when you really are a gin, baby girl. Respect is just the minimum. When you still defending them now. Lauren is only human. Don't think I haven't been through the same predicament. Let it sit inside your head.
Great song. You missed it, Ryan. We were fawning over that when you were outside.
I was listening to it.
During the break. Well, Kevin and I were both. It's a it's a stunning song. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it.
Absolutely concur.
And her, like, her vocal, her phrasing and her pitch, like, the way that she delivers the song is so amazing. It's like all of those, like, sort of extra gymnastics, like the window dressing on that shit. Mm-hmm. Like, just the song itself, especially with a hook like that, is so compelling. And it's like, why would you do the extra stuff? Like, well, anyway, she's
yeah,
terrific.
I know that,
like,
we were just talking about that. Yeah, she's such a double threat. I mean, her voice is, she's got that smoky kind of, I don't know, just, she's great. Like, but you know, one thing I want to ask you, and this is the only thing that confuses me a little bit, but when she is talking about that thing, what do you think she's alluding to?
She goes back and forth from men and women.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
I think she's talking about the doing it chain.
Oh, the doing it.
Yeah.
The ding dong. And
the doing of it. Yeah.
The ding dong and the hoo ha.
The PP and the V thing.
Oh, good God.
That sounds like we're just like, wait. That sounds like the worst crime fighting duo from the, like, Starsky and Hutch. It's the PP and the do thing or the V thing. Sorry. Or like the worst like morning zoo team.
or SNL sketch. Yeah, whatever. Anyway.
It's just bad all the way around.
Yeah, so, no, I do think she's probably talking about doing it. But yeah, ultimately, that, you know, the thing that, like, carries you into that song, that carries you into the material, is, like, just the way that she, like, that song kind of catapults the listener along.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, it's propulsive, and then there's, like, it's a great song. It's produced really well. A lot of this album is produced really well.
Plinking piano thing, just like for whatever reason, like just
yeah. I mean, it's hook after hook. Then there's the horn hooks. You know, at the end of the rapping part, like in that's like the bridge part right before the chorus.
Did you just do like a trombone motion?
Well, but I was also like,
Shane looks like he's making bread over here. I don't know what's going on.
I'm like I don't know how to feel breasts, and I'm doing. I'm also like a trombone.
Like for the first time, you're like. You're like 12.
Fumbling for a light switch. I don't know.
I don't even think I was that. Yeah, okay. Yes, thank you. Thanks for pointing. It's just, well, we do nothing if not compelling radio.
Yeah, no, the point being, there's a reason that song did so well and was a number one hit. Like, it's got sort of all the elements working for it, where even the three of us who might not be the target audience, you know, it's hard to, like, it's pretty infectious.
Let's get back to the syrupy aspects of it. I mean, it's not just the vocal histrionics. There's some... Okay, again...
We've been glossing over those a little bit because I think the stuff that we like...
The
like
stuff
I wanted, as opposed to something like Meatloaf, you know, this was a really popular record that I was like, I kind of wanted to connect with the stuff that made it popular and like, at the very least, like, sort of understand what the reason was, and like it was actually ended up pretty apparent. But the stuff that's not in my wheelhouse,
no,
far from my wheelhouse.
I think there's a great deal of how can I was reading some comment. I'll paraphrase. She's like, I can't be a racist. I love God loves everything. God is love, and I love God. There's, you know, stuff like that. I mean, I think there's a lot of that current of one love and running through her mind, and especially at the time if she's in Jamaica.
Hey man, praise be to Jah.
You like this record less than Kevin and I, in general.
I think that's fair to say.
I don't think that we think it's the masterpiece that, I mean,
here's how I feel about it. It's like looking at like a really well-prepared, expensive lobster entree. Like, I just don't like lobster. Like, there's nothing you can do to it to make me into it. And, like, if you're going to have, like, and I love, like, 60s soul and 70s.
60s lobster.
Or 70s. This actually will, like, lead us into the next track I think we're going to play. There's a funky track on here, and I like some, like, funky 70s soul. But, like, when it started to get into that sort of Luther Vandross.
Find a connection between that and this at all.
Well, just talking about like the overly ornate vocal stylings.
Okay, well,
but
you're not saying
tired
that,
very.
But the whole
quickly.
Album is not like that. I mean, we listen to and we'll listen to another song where there's very little of that. When those things pop up more often, I think on this record, they tend to happen on those. Overly ornate is a good descriptive phrase. They tend to pop up on those syrupy ballads. That sort of almost use that when it's slowed down, it's when she starts doing that.
Are you guys talking about slow jamming?
Kind of. Yeah, kind of slow jammy.
Yeah.
I mean, and I can see it. Like, I think if I could get past the vocal stylings, I would actually notice the lyrics more. I mean, I've said this hundreds of times probably. I don't notice lyrics unless I'm already into the music. And I can't get past the music because the vocal stylings are so just not the type that I'm into.
But again, they're not aiming for you.
Well, after other people who like this.
Sure.
I don't think it's bad music. It's just not music that was intended for me.
But there aren't that many songs where that's an impediment to its listening if you don't like it. I mean, the record, I mean,
one thing that we haven't talked about that did come up in some of the stuff that I read was that I thought was kind of interesting, is that there's a lot of this record. There's some of it that talks about the demise of relationships and sort of all that, and we can unpack that later in the podcast. But there's also a lot of it that's sort of like fussy about the music industry.
That's true.
And at the same time, she has this all-star crew of people that she's now some of them have become all stars since then, but some of them were already pretty well known
John
players
Legend.
At the time. Yeah,
John Legend
like,
has since become that, and he was
not at the time, but yeah.
But Carlos Santana's on this record. D'Angelo.
Yeah, she traded a track with. Yeah, she worked on something for Carlos Santana in exchange for him.
Mary J. Blige.
Yeah. Not.
So I mean, she bitches about it, but at the same time,
it feels a little bit like a paper tiger that. That whole situation.
Good way to put it.
Anyway, okay, so
what was the song you?
Yeah, I was thinking Every Ghetto, Every City, which is the funkiest thing
that's
by
true.
Far.
Yeah, yeah.
On
yeah,
this
let's
record.
Listen to that.
I was just a little girl, skinny legs and press and curl. My mother always thought I'd be a star. Way before the record deal, the streets that nurtured Lauryn Hill made sure that I never go too far. Every ghetto, every city and suburban place I've been make me recall my days in the New Jerusalem. Story starts in Hooterville. Grew up next to Ivy Hill when kids were stealing quarter bills for fun. Killed a guy in Carter Park. Rode a mongoose till it's dark. Watching kids show off the stolen ones. Every ghetto, every city, and suburban place I've been made me recall my days in the New Jerusalem. You know it's hot. Don't forget what you got. Looking back.
So was it every ghetto?
Every ghetto.
And every city?
Every city.
All of them.
Well, ostensibly, I mean.
Yeah, ostensibly it's every ghetto in every city, but I'm pretty sure that there's, I mean, are there ghettos in every city? I mean, what is the cutoff?
What qualifies as a city?
Right, that's what I'm saying. What's the cutoff
line? I would think every, town above, say, 400,000 people.
Every metro area.
Well,
we'll have a ghetto.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm sure this is what she was getting after, by the way.
Yeah.
It's demographics.
Yeah, let's look at the hard numbers. Let's look at some charts.
There was, I did watch, this is so pasty. I did watch, Steve Harvey did a Jerry Seinfeld show, The Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Yeah.
And, part of, I guess, part of that segment was Seinfeld came on stage at a gig of his, and they did like a Q&A thing, or maybe it was maybe he came on his show. I don't remember. Anyway, but the deal was like Jerry had a bit where he was talking about how that African Americans have a thing that they say when they're mad at everybody, which is "fuck all y'all," and he's like, because this is Seinfeld logic.
What are you?
He's like. I don't want
to. I assume he's getting to a point.
He's like, it's because you don't know how many, if there are a lot of people in the room, you don't want to take the time to tell each person, fuck you. So it's like.
So it's just blanketing the room.
Yeah. And of course, he did it in Seinfeldese, so it was, super
Which
New York-y,
I'm assuming like, that's the reason why he's a billionaire and you're not.
Who are these people?
It's one of the many, many reasons. But anyway, yeah, so. Another Lauryn Hill track off this record, Ryan. You were saying that this is
it's the one funk track,
yeah.
And like I have a soft spot for that, and I love me some George Clinton, and this is about as close as I'm going to get on this particular record.
Where do you stand on the Bootsy Collins?
I love me some Bootsy Collins.
Yeah,
he sounds like he plays the bass with rubber bands or something.
Right. Yeah,
that's an apt description.
Well, and I will say this, and we won't sidebar on this for too long, but I saw Bootsy Collins interviewed as part of the James Brown documentary that aired on HBO, and he was talking about how, like, when he got recruited to be part of James Brown's backing band, they talked like all of the instruments that those guys played were played like percussive instruments. So even the guitars were played like, and if you hear it, like, that sounds like it makes sense.
Oh, completely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you hear that, and then you hear something like you fast forward and you translate to something like this, which is like sort of a modern funk track, certainly when it came out. And you can see like sort of that, the evolution of the funk.
This is very much informed by the earlier funk.
One of these days,
I'm going to pick a song that Bootsy Collins is very much featured on, but I'm not going to reveal what it is. It wouldn't be that hard to figure out, though.
Okay. All right, well, we're about the point in the show when we ought to take a few minutes with.
Yeah.
And
you've got it this week, but you'll let us know after we play the good times.
Oh, yes, let's all enter into the special studio that is a few minutes
with. Wait, I love the way that you said it. You're like, it's the time of the show where we take a few minutes with, as though, like, we're going to take a break. Kevin's going to retire to the bathroom for a little bit.
Hey, what?
Sorry, that's just the way that it sounded to me.
All right, so we'll be back with a few minutes with. So we've reached that point in the episode where it's time to take a few minutes with. And tonight, or today, or...
whenever you're listening to this.
Yes, whenever you're listening to this here podcast.
Purgatory.
Yes, exactly. We're gonna do a track by Wild Flag, which is Carrie Brownstein's side project band in between Slater Kinney Records and all the other.
Oh, that was like a super groupie thing,
kind
of.
Yeah. So anyway, they put out a video for a song called Romance where the band
sounds like an outtake of the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, right?
It could be, could be, yes, yes, yes. But yeah, where the band goes on what is termed as perhaps the most awesome lunch break in the history of lunch breaks.
I am intrigued.
Well, I saw a really awesome lunch break one time when Ryan picked a song, Stoned and Starving, and that was
a lunch break song.
Pretty awesome lunch break song.
Yeah. I had to make, we were like, okay, can we shut the video down? I'm like, no, you have to wait till she eats the sandwich.
No, you kept going, no, you didn't say that. You were like, you have to wait till the climax. Like you have to wait till the end. Like, that's when it pays up. You have to wait for the payoff.
The payoff.
And the payoff was her finally sitting down and
eating the McDonald's.
And eating a, like a
hamburger.
Egg McMuffin. Or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's watch the
is
song.
Is that the payoff?
It was for her. She was stoned and starving.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a payoff.
What's the name of this Wild Flag song?
The name of the song is called Romance.
Remember, right, it could be on the Lauryn Hill album. You just,
that's right.
You just made that joke like less than a minute ago.
I'm not that smart, Shane.
It's true. All right, let's listen to it. Shane would say,
"Stole it from you."
So, that was Wild Flag Romance. Boys, you've now seen.
Man, I thought the Go-Go's just dropped some PCP and went out and made a video.
I like the fact that it's like you sort of think you know where the narrative's going to go at certain parts of that video, and then the narrative just doesn't care that much. Like that's like kind of
so.
What
wait, they start at like a corporate job, and then it hits lunchtime.
Well, they all work in different departments, like you know the janitor and the executive.
The candlestick maker, what have you.
Yes. Well, no. I point that out because they wouldn't normally put on the weird Halloween mask.
Is that why? Was that clear to you? I didn't get
it. It was clear
that
to me. They're from different departments. They don't want to be seen.
I just felt like I ate a big bowl of cereal.
it was a big bowl of cereal.
It was a good song.
Yeah.
No, really good song. So, wait, they go out and, like, what, rip off a Starbucks or something?
They kind of.
They
play some pickup basketball.
But not very well.
And then they kick the ball into the trees.
Go read some Henry Rollins to an old couple who clearly doesn't want them there.
And do a little haphazard yard work and heels.
They go and like throw off all the records off the wall of the record store and put their own one record where all those records used to be.
It's a very Dada video, but it's a very slack Dada video. Like it's like, you know, this is where we're going to end up, but we kind of don't care that much.
You know what was interesting? The whole thing was interesting, but the song is great. Good song.
Great song, yeah. Check it out. Like, you don't even need a video to enjoy the song. Yeah.
Wild Flag Romance.
That is some 90s indie rock. And also, the whole video was 90s attitude. Like, it was very, very, very
well,
90s.
And this came out, what, like 6-7 years ago, something like that?
I don't know, something like
not
that.
Not even that long ago, I don't think. Like, 5 years. Well,
yeah, it was during the Slater-Kinney hiatus.
Okay.
And they've recently reformed.
Yeah.
So sometime in that donut, like, in between.
But it's, I'm saying, like, the... Not necessarily the visual aesthetic, but the spiritual aesthetic is tied to the 90s very much. Like a very ironic humor, like surrealism. Uh-huh. I mean, you guys know I'm a fan of surreal videos from the 90s. I think we've watched a couple over the course of the show.
Oh, sure. It's all we ever talk about.
Well, if I had my druthers.
John David Stutz. Are you pulling up a John David Stutz reference?
I'm sorry. Anyway, no. But to your point, Shane, like, we do talk about that from time to time. And, I would say where the 90s ethos is concerned, clearly it's there. It's not as like, there's not as much flannel.
Well, I was going to say the way that their clothes, their wardrobe has changed quite a bit.
Sure.
But the sense of humor and the sound
is rooted in that.
It's better produced than a lot of that 90s stuff of the same ilk.
Well, it's easy to do that now. I mean, partially that was an aesthetic back then, and this is something we will go around and round about for the rest of our lives. But, I mean, you and I
hope not.
For the rest of our friendship. But it's easier to get a better looking video and a better sounding recording for less money now, infinitely easier than it was 25 years ago, 20 years ago. I mean, without even thinking about
it. Well, we won't, as Kevin would say, go down that rabbit hole. But
we won't sidebar on
people
this
did
too
that
long.
Shit on purpose back then. And,
all right. Well,
no, but they did it on purpose. But also, you couldn't afford film to. I mean, you couldn't. You know, you can make a digital movie.
Well, I'm just talking about the audio.
Yeah, but you can you can record on the Pro Tools or its ilk for incredibly cheap and make a passable sounding. Yes, they did it for aesthetics back then, but also, I mean, there's budgetary concerns, too. I mean, it's a lot harder to, when you have to pay for tape and pay for film, it's a lot harder to want to pay more for the higher quality stuff.
Sure.
Well, I think any way you shake it.
Highly entertaining video.
Yeah, not a dull video. And I thought,
and you could divorce the song from the video, and it would be also
Well, the video is great, and the song's great.
All right, so
nice call, Kev.
Yeah, sure. Check it out. That was Wild Flag. Romance is the name of the track, and let's talk a little bit about Lauryn Hill coming out of the break.
One of the things that we would be completely remiss in our duties.
Derelict in our duties?
Well, yeah, I guess that's the way. Yeah, I was going to say I structured that sentence really well. I was going to say we'd be really remiss if we didn't bring this up. And that is,
she kind of quit the music business.
She kind of fell off a crazy cliff. She kind of fell off a cliff into Crazy Creek.
Well, right. And maybe that's part of what I was saying at the top of the broadcast. Like, all right, well, is this, I remember what I know of her is of this crazy lady who put out this one great record, and then there's this sort of weird, enigmatic.
There's a couple things. Like, I don't know necessarily that she's crazy. I know that she didn't want to be that fucking famous.
Sure.
No,
and I don't know why anybody would want to be that fucking famous. Like, right. I'd like this podcast to get pretty famous and, you know, pay us a little money, which it doesn't right now. So, you know, tell your friends. But. Shane's shaking his head. Who would want to be that famous? Like, I can't imagine.
George W. Bush?
I'm
just making up a politician.
What I will say is, Louis C.K. had something really interesting to say about fame. And he was talking about the show that he does now, and part of the reason that he gave up more money to like kind of have a control over it that he does, and he said it's because he wanted to remember the time before he had achieved the level of fame that he's achieved, because he's like, once you sort of get to a certain level, you can't turn it off. Like, you'll never
be unfamous,
right? You'll
anymore.
Never like so well he, like being able to like fake it, like play like you
tell that to Corey Haim like. Circa 2002.
Yeah,
well, sure.
But when you say Corey Haim, we know who you're talking about.
True. You are right.
He's not unfamous.
Well, okay.
He's
so
less famous. You
guys are both saying something that makes a lot of sense. And so when I say Crazy Creek, I mean, I'm obvious. Well, in my mind, I'm obviously.
Well, she also spit out a bunch of babies. Like six.
Yeah. I guess what my point is, I was trying to be funny, but I guess my point is like, yeah, she suffered from lots of stress and did not respond to it well in the public eye in being that incredibly famous at that time. Like, I mean,
well,
that is
not,
definitely
like,
true.
You know, and I would imagine that, like, if you're, and this is probably simplifying the reality, but like, if you think about it, like, so if you come out of this place where you have this tumultuous, like, breakup of a band that had really, or an act that really seemed to be going places, and you have a huge falling out with this collaborator who also you had a romantic liaison with, and then, you know, as it turns out, like, you meet this other guy who happens to be the son of somebody who is also really famous.
Mega famous.
Yeah, like posthumously, like, lionized, you know, no pun intended.
He's the Beatles of reggae.
Definitely. If there was anything above the Beatles for reggae, it would be Bob Marley.
So you go to that, and so, like, I think at some point, like, it's got to feel like you're swimming in familiar waters and that you're hobnobbing with people who are of a certain status. But like even then, like you're not.
Well, at some point, you got to feel like you have no privacy.
You're not
ever
shrinking from the limelight at all. And it's like she pours her heart out into this record, and it and gets lauded for it. And then it's like everybody's like, "Well, what's next? Like, what's the old? What's the? Have we talked about we? I know Ryan. I know you've mentioned this. It's like how long you've got to do the first record is forever.
Oh, your whole your entire lifetime up till that moment.
Then you have like the first record. Months.
Then you got six. Well, it's like 6 months of being back in the old model. To come up with your second.
Yeah.
Like, but, you know, I can't imagine that kind of pressure. Like, and I definitely can't imagine going, fuck it.
Well, like, more to the point.
I think it's more than fuck it, though.
Yeah, more to the point is, like, how do you, you can't get inspired for the first time again. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like,
yeah.
How do you.
Well, like, she probably felt like, and I'm. This conjecture here, but she probably felt like there was a little bit of a weight off her not being part of a trio with the Fugees, and she was finally able to do like her own thing called Shots, came out with a genius record, and then it got all these accolades.
Well, part of the reason that she wanted to do that, I mean, she was under a lot of pressure, and from what I understand, I'm not attempting to be the mouthpiece of Lauryn Hill, but from what I understand, part of the reason that she was attempting to make this record in the first place is not. Is to show, from what I read, like not just that she's just as good as Wyclef, but that she's not just one of his round the way girls.
Well,
and then so this comes, this beginning of this starts from a stressful place, and then her life just becomes more and more and more stressful. You know, with all the children, with how successful it was, it sounds like there's a lot of insecurity at play too.
Well, very well, maybe. Let me share a little nugget. This is from this is an excerpt from NME, and I thought that I read a few takes on this record, and you know some of them were more prescient than others.
Are we talking about The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, or are we talking about Unplugged 2.0?
No, we're talking about The Miseducation.
Okay, because we need to talk about that in a second too.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, I'm
New
gonna,
Musical
I'm gonna,
Express,
I'm gonna
which is a British music magazine.
I'm going to share a little bit of this as quickly as I can. So it says. At their best, the Fugees are or were capable of drawing lines between late 90s American urban music and the conscious soul and reggae of the 70s to produce a fluent and impassioned kind of hip-hop. This is the culture imperative around which Lauryn Hill's remarkable solo shot pivots. Imagine a rap LP made in 1975 with the kind of political and personal scope of, like, say, What's Going On, or with the idea of a young Stevie Wonder hitting his peak in 1998. That's what we're dealing with here. At first glance, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill appears a worthy but unappetizing prospect. This is their term. A concept album about the injustices of the music business and Hill's ensuing battles with an array of fools, sexists, and skeptics massed against her. That uses all the industry's machinery and a guest roster of Mary J. Blige, D'Angelo, Carlos Santana, and even as it, like, sort of using that even as it denounces it. It's to Hill's credit, however, that the emotional heroism prevails over the poor superstar wingering, most avoidably on the frail lullaby. This particular reviewer doesn't love the lullaby to Zion, where she serenades her son Zion and details the professional pressure on her to have an abortion with stark candor. So, like, and that's sort of mostly what that song is, that particular song is about. So, anyway, it's a... That is but one example of many that are on this record that come from a starkly female perspective, and she's dealing with some real world shit and just sort of putting it all out there.
Yeah, I mean, that puts it in a perspective, I guess, that puts it through a prism. At first, I wasn't liking that review because it does the thing that I'd like the least when journalists presume to understand.
Well, and in fairness, I read you a snippet. So, like, it's not, like, it kind of, it... Like, I thought it was an interesting
it is.
Part of a take, but it's not necessarily, you know, reflective of
well, the and there's there's an inherent sort of contradiction in Lauryn Hill. I don't know why Shane's miming right now, but he is.
Sure.
But there's an inherent contradiction in Lauryn Hill in that, like, so many younger artists or artists who haven't achieved, like, her level would love to be where she is, and then once you get there, you know, she's having a tough time with it.
Well, everybody thinks when they get into any sort of entertainment industry that
it's going to be just, you know.
Well, in music industry more than more so than a lot of other ones because
Honey Kissed Farts for the Rest of Your Life.
Thanks. Can that be the name of
that
your...
That should be your punk band.
That's your Captain and Tennelly or Captain and Tennille cover band.
Yeah.
I think... Well, that's a whole other story that we go
but
on.
But no, road. I mean, like, you know, she gets to the pinnacle and she's supremely unhappy.
And I, you know, and I don't think it's necessarily... Like, in fairness, like, it's easy to sit back here X number of years later and go like, oh, poor little rich girl with her successful record. But at the time, you know... I'm sure that, like, if you only have one choice on your reality and you're, like, your reality is, like, this is the place and time where I am, regardless of whether, like, whoever you are, it's like, you know, you sort of move forward the best way you can and then, like, the results are the results. So I don't, you know, I honestly don't know, like...
Well, and especially
it would be hard for me to be, and I'm not deigning to know, like, how she felt at the time, but it'd be hard for me to make $25 million in a year and... be unhappy.
Five yeah. Kids, ubiquitous. I think.
I mean, I wouldn't want to be famous, but yeah, give me $25 million. Yeah, I'll take it.
Well, it's sure. It's a devil's deal, man. I mean, when you talk about stuff like that, I think.
Well,
I mean, don't you think?
Like, I think we can all agree that like that money came to her in at her creative peak, and so it's like you just you know I think that's sort of a question that you all and like maybe it's a. Like so, this is a weird analogy, but like, it's kind of similar to like athletes. Like, you see some of them that are sort of at their athletic peak, who think that they're going to be in that kind of shape forever. Their body's never going to break down.
That's not a weird analogy. That's an exact analogy.
Well, I know it's. I mean, it feels exact for me, but like sometimes.
I mean, musicians can pull it off for longer because like they don't have to contort their bodies in physical ways.
But you can see, like, yeah, like.
But it's not going to last forever. Fame is a fleeting thing, and like you make your money when you can make your money.
Well, in terms of performance, like, and this isn't exactly, again, not exactly apples to apples, but like you look at Letterman from the 80s and Letterman from the aughts. Like,
well, he made a lot more money in the aughts.
He made a lot more money in the aughts, but
way
he was
funnier in the 80s.
Well, and he just was challenging the status quo more in that time. And so in that sense, like, you know, there's a lot more of an opportunity to do that when you can really sort of, like, when you feel like you have nothing to lose or you feel like you're so close to something.
Well, you try a lot harder. Yeah. And you know, maybe put more of yourself out there.
Yeah.
Well, I think both of you guys are, I think it becomes, like, at some point, it becomes painful for people because I think a lot of people that seek out that spotlight seek it out because of deep-seated insecurity, and once they hope that will
and they think they're going to be validated once they
and then once they get out there, then it just becomes stage fright. It just transitions into a different place. So yeah, this is a much longer discussion, and it's not as fun.
How about we listen to another Lauryn Hill song?
Yeah, why don't
Shane's getting freaked out because he was a musician. Well, you are a musician. But
yeah, well, it's not what I want to.
Yeah,
not necessarily what I want to talk about, but
I've seen you play in front of 500 people, and you'll probably wish that I never brought that up.
Do you have a track in mind that you want to play out here on the next one?
Pull this up here.
500 people.
I have.
Well, I've played them.
All right,
you're offline. Yeah, let's. I want to play.
It's back.
The second song, well, the first real song on the record, I guess.
Well, they're okay. So I do enjoy the little interludes between the tracks, which I don't know what the backstory on those is. Like, it's a bunch of kids talking.
No,
about
I mean, I think it's like it's intended to be a concept record of sorts. Like, and that the banter is, you know, has to do with the. It's Lauryn Hill's miseducation. So there's chatter that feels like it's germane to that idea that happens between some of the tracks.
It's good. I mean, the whole it's one of those little, like the intro in the beginning of this it ties it together. But I like the first, well, intro is the first song, but I like that the first non-intro or non-bridge
Lost Ones.
Lost Ones. Really think it shows her off as an MC. And I like to listen to that.
It's funny how money changes situation. Miscommunication lead to complication. My emancipation don't fit your equation. I was on the humble, you on every station. Someone play young Lauren like she done. But remember not to game the one of the sun. Everything you did has already been done. I know all the tricks from bricks to Kingston. My ting done, major kingdom, one run. Now understand El Boogie, not violent. But if a thing test me, run to me gun. Take a threat to me newborn son. L been this way since creation. A groupie call you far from temptation. Now you on ball over separation. Tarnish my image in the conversation. Who you gonna scrimmage like you the champion? You might win some, but you just lost one. You might win some, but you just lost one. You might win some, but you just lost one. You might win some, but you just lost one. You might win some, but you just lost one. Now, how come your talk turned cold?
So I think Ryan's right. Like I think you're right, Shane. Like I think this is sort of the funkiest track on the record. What was
no
your
the
take?
Other one he thought was the funkiest
that
track
was
on
the funkiest.
Record.
I
actually think this one's more funky, like, but not in the instrumentation wise. So
it's the hip hoppiest.
Well, okay. I mean, maybe. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I could see that too.
Like she just really swings, and it like when she's rapping, and like it, there's like a. There's a long connect. We didn't even touch on this. There's a long connection that wasn't exploited enough between hip hop and jazz. You saw in the early '90s a little bit, but swing jazz, like big band, like when it's really going with the brass and all that stuff. She kind of raps like that a little bit sometimes, like punches in, punches out, then flows. Then
when listening to this record, it did make me wonder about the distinction between R&B and rap and hip hop. And is hip hop where the twain meet? Like
no,
R&B?
Like hip hop is rap. I mean, there's not really. But R&B. I mean, I think that this record is genre busting. So it.
And there, yeah, and to be fair, like there's a lot of sort of intentional back and forth, like moving from one style to another, like. Which is part of the reason that it's got lasting power, and part of the reason that it sold a shit ton of records.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of the reason. I mean, she's really shaking stuff up.
That was the SoundScan designation, wasn't it? Shit ton?
Shit ton of records.
Yeah, I want to see that placard, by the way.
Exactly. Well, it's got, and the quotes are gigantic. Yeah.
Shit ton
it
of records.
It sold a shit ton.
Little less. couple.
Yeah.
Wait,
I think a little less than a shit ton is a bunch.
I think that whoever designed those categories for SoundScan, that's how he had to talk, like Cousin Eloy, like, well, shit ton, couple.
just lots of gesturing.
More than
you. So, yeah, that song was brilliant. You and I are definitely on that, at least, Kevin.
I think
like,
so.
It's a good song.
Right out of the bat, she's just an incredible rapper, and... you know, then I think it's really interesting because, like the song I was saying earlier in the show that really put her on the map, not to mention the Fugees, but was Killing Me Softly, where it's her voice, which is incredible in that song. And I think it's a fucking ballsy maneuver for her to not launch this record, which has a lot of her singing voice in it, to launch it with a straight rap song. I mean, it's top to bottom, you know what, like the more that we listen to these songs and I remember, like I like it more and more and more. Like I liked it a lot coming in here, but the more I listen to these songs, I like it more throughout the night. Like it,
I think she's very talented and I'm not the target audience.
Yeah, that's fair. And this
fair
stuff,
enough.
And you know, and I think I kind of split the difference. Like the stuff that's not in my wheelhouse, I like to repeat, like I will probably never be a fan of, but the things that really resonate, like the top tracks on this record, I think, are... There's a reason that they stand the test of time.
I agree with you. Yeah, I'm the same way. There's a lot that I don't like. There's not a lot of stuff that I'm not polarized by on this. But again, target audience or not target... I mean, yeah, I got... You know, it's funny that you keep saying this because I definitely was thinking almost... I was remembering when we listened to Loopy Fiasco and you were saying, like... This is the best album we've talked about that I will never listen to again.
Yeah.
I mean, and I was thinking about it. I was like, yeah, I mean, this is just not what you listen to.
No, I listen to fucking dorky white guys playing guitars.
Well, even dorky white guy. I mean, like, you're not going to go home tonight and be like, you know what I want to listen to? Blonde on Blonde or whatever. What do we do? Blood on the Tracks? Yeah, I mean.
Oh, Dylan. Yeah, no.
Well, okay, my point.
I mean, not every dorky white guy, just... That's mostly what I listen to is dorky white guys.
Well, but you don't automatically qualify. Well, you didn't. No. I was going to
be a dorky white guy.
I was going to say if you automatically qualified, then you would have liked the Beastie Boys a whole hell of a lot more than you did because those are some dorky white guys. And
fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, at any rate, I think.
I do think this actually kind of turns us into our final segment. Modern, what do we call it? Modern love.
Modern lovers, rock
current,
tracks.
Current affair.
The current affair, it's which is yours tonight, Ryan.
Tame Impala. So I work with a couple people who just can't stop fucking talking about this band. And one of the guys, like, illegally downloaded it and brought it in, and his new... As of right now,
Tame Impala is...
They have a record coming out like this week.
Within a week, yeah. But they've been releasing singles from it since May.
And it's been like reviewed. Like there are advanced copies that are out there, so
which is
like,
probably what happened. It went out on a torrent site and all the, you know, Tame Impala geeks, which apparently are legion. Like they're like a thing. Like,
they're a good band.
Yeah. I mean, from what I've heard, like, good band. I'm not going to, you know, go over the moon with the accolades just yet, but I'll give them a listen. And I don't really know this song.
Well, why don't we listen to it, Ryan? What do you have for us?
'Cause I'm a Man.
Is that the name of the song?
I was going to say, are you trying to justify?
That's my justification for playing this.
I'll play whatever I want in my own house.
Our stories are real. A current affair. Our stories are original. Morning Pulling.
Tame Impala, 'Cause I'm a Man.
Second coming of the Beatles?
Well, okay. Here's what occurred to me while watching that video. It answers the eternal question that everybody's always had. What would happen if Rene Magritte, Max Headroom, and MC Escher had a baby and it sounded like John Lennon?
Well, or Level 42. Or
that too.
I think if we had seen that, and again, I said it, this song has grown on me, but that comes from a deep well of despair when I first heard it.
I thought it was a perfectly decent
song.
It's
a perfectly fine song. But if we were watching that video, which basically looks like somebody got a hold of some software from like 1985.
It does. It totally looks like it took a bunch of drugs.
And took a bunch of drugs and then made a video out of it. Like Pixar, if you go back and watch Pixar stuff from like the late 80s, this is what it looks like. But
and they're just fucking around. Like they're like, no one will ever see this.
The song is decent. The video is good. But if we, if I had brought of that video in from a band from 1986, we would have been laughing our asses off about that song and that video right now.
Sure.
And you know that.
Maybe.
Not maybe. We would have. I'm a man, mama, like, or woman, like.
I wasn't paying a ton of attention to the lyrics.
Well, the thing that strikes me.
There's a lot
me,
to look at there. There's not necessarily a lot to digest, but there's a lot to look at.
That's true. Yeah, when he gets attacked by, like, the pills, the blue and red pills.
He got attacked by pills. That happened.
Yeah, the interesting thing about Tame Impala, like, in particular, is, like, one review that I read of that band said that they characterized them as sounding like the Beatles had stayed together through the 70s. Like, and I was like, and then I have that, I have Lonerism, like, I have that record, and, like, mm-hmm. I don't think that that's totally accurate.
I don't think it's like, I think there's some Black Sabbath stuff sometimes. I think there's some psychedelic, sure, like, church stuff sometimes.
I can see, like, it's a, I feel like it's a lazy connection, but it's like there's another, like, well, there
the,
is.
The timbre of that guy's voice sounds enough like John Lennon that,
yes,
I think that's an easy place to go for lazy journalists, which, it, by the way, I hate to say this, if there are any music journalists out there, most of them are lazy.
Like, yeah, so some certainly are, and I do think it's like one of those places where it's like, okay, that's a connection that I don't know, you know, may or may not have helped that band along the way. I'm a fan of the, like, their previous work, so
I just knew, like, a single, like, and there's one guy at work who there's a couple guys at work that really like them, but there's one guy who is like, oh yeah, man, I think they're like the new Beatles, and I was like, dude,
yeah,
that's like a big yardstick to pull out.
Very, very, very big.
Well, and you can't, just, they're for a thousand reasons, which we're not going to start here. Like, that the market is not the same market.
I mean, I'm intrigued enough that I'll listen to some more of their stuff, for,
well,
sure.
Well,
and, like, the record he was playing the other day, he had illegally downloaded and was playing it, and he'll go out and buy it. He actually made a point saying, like, oh, I'm not going to go buy it too, but I just wanted to hear it now.
Well, this is the rest of where I was going. Like, so if that premise is true, and Lonerism was supposed to sound like, you know, the Beatles had stayed together through the 70s and then gotten a little trippy, and Ben from Perth, I don't know, like. This track, and maybe it's just because I had the visual representation right in front of me, sounded like, okay, well, they're still, like, sort of mining that that same retro space, but now, like, minus the synthy shit, like, it seems like they've sort of moved forward into the 80s, or, like, bordering on the, maybe it's the late 90s. Like,
well,
I don't know.
One of the things I think that's most interesting about this band, and at least in my prior connections with them in their first couple of albums, is there's a lot of stylistic movement, a lot of stylistic.
Well, you said Black Sabbath earlier, and I mean, I haven't heard enough of them to have.
Oh yeah, there's definitely some of that occasional. There's not instability. There's a lot of itchiness. Like, we're gonna try a lot of different stylistic things, but it comes back to the fact that the guy writes great, great pop songs presented in a really weird way. I mean, the melodies are just killer.
I'm in favor of that.
Yeah.
So I feel like I should investigate these guys
more. I think you should, too. And actually, it's interesting that you brought this album up, because it's on my list of my next, like, six or seven albums I was going to bring in here, because we have never talked about them before.
Well, that doesn't necessarily disqualify it.
No, I know.
Are you talking about Lonerism or this new record?
This new record, yeah, right, which I haven't heard. I've heard Lonerism, like, a thousand times.
But it's been, but this one, you know, to your point, has been buzzy by virtue of the success of Lonerism.
Like, yeah. And they're a great band. Well, okay, guys, this is fun.
Who's got next week's
Kevin
record?
Does.
Do I?
Okay. You do. Well, I mean, if
we
could do like the original cast soundtrack of Hee Haw from 1977.
No.
That I've been saving up that I want.
No.
Buck Owens is on that. So,
I was gonna do Hank Williams Jr. Unplugged.
I'm pretty sure that doesn't exist, but I would so listen.
You know
to
what would be funny if, like, Kevin told us it existed, we believed him, and then he, like, at the last minute, like, got one of his friends to just record a bunch of Hank Williams songs, yeah, like, in the garage or something.
Hey, sing some twangy shit. No, we're I'll have to give it so next week will be a surprise. I'm gonna have to give this a little bit of thought, and I'll obviously let you guys know.
Just splice it in.
Yeah.
In a really
hey Kevin,
way.
What are you gonna do next week? I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do soundtrack from Superman 3.
Yes,
I hope it's that.
Oh, good God.
Is there a soundtrack from Superman 3?
Probably.
If there is.
Is that the one that Richard Pryor was in?
Yeah, yeah.
I just assume that a Superman 3 never exists because the series gets rebooted every time they go through two shitty movies.
Like, that is true.
Anyway, but this was fun, you guys. Until next week, I'm Kevin.
You're still going to be Kevin next week, by the way.
Stop. You know what he means.
Dick.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Shane.
This is Somebody Likes It.